Hey everybody, real quick before we get to today's episode, I just wanted to remind you all about Jupiter Jet Volume 2. It's by friends of the show, Jason Inman and Ashley Robinson. And I love Jupiter Jet. The Volume 1 was such a favorite of mine and my daughter, who at the time was 6 years old, and she loved it so much, and we really bonded over it. The first comic that she couldn't wait to read and you know, didn't want to put down, and she even was the first person ever to cosplay as Jupiter Jet and got to meet Jason and Ashley. So that was really cool. Jupiter Jet has a special place in my heart, as you can tell. And I've read the first 20 pages of Volume 2, and it has that same really all-ages wholesome feel. You know, the first volume had that classic pulp Rocketeer feel to it, maybe mixed with a little DC Superhero Girls. And the second volume is picking up right where that left off, maybe with the stakes raised a little bit, I'll say. And Jason and Ashley always throw a bunch of twists and turns that are a lot of fun as well. So there's a link to go and check out the article on LRM Online to read more details about the Kickstarter. And there's also a link to the Kickstarter itself, so you can go and support it. I highly recommend it. It's a great, fun, all-ages book. And if you have a young boy or girl, I think they'll enjoy it just as much as my daughter does. So thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today we're going to be talking about a strip called Crumbs. I have the creator, Danny Sterling, with me. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, really interesting strip. Funny story, though. For some reason, when I originally looked at it, I thought there were 43 episodes out. So I'm like, okay, maybe I can read them all. And so I started down the path, I started reading, and I was just devouring them. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm glad there's 43 episodes. I can't wait. This is so good. And then I got to the end of episode 28, the end of season one, and I was like pushing the arrow, and there was no more episodes. And I was so disappointed. Then I looked, and I'm like, oh no, there's only 28. Where did I get the idea there was 43? So really good strip, really enjoyed it, and I can't wait for more.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's good to hear that it's devourable, considering its name.
Yeah, it was really good. I really totally binged it. We're going to talk about it, everybody. We're going to let you know what the strip's all about. But as you know, if you've listened to Webtoon Wednesday, we always like to start with the secret origin of the creator. So, Danny, tell us about your history with comics. Did you grow up reading them? Were they always a part of your life? And then maybe about how you got the idea to become a creator, and then your previous work.
Okay. So basically, yeah, I was always into comics, but I didn't always have access to as many as I would like. Like, I was always encouraged to read like anything I wanted, but the only comics I could get hold of were like Archie and Cape Comics, and I was never really into them. But every summer, my extended family would come visiting, and they'd bring me like French comics, and they were awesome. So that, you know, start the love of it. And then around when I was 13, I found my way into webcomics and manga, and that was sort of where I really dove in and started making my own.
So when you said you didn't have access to the kind of comics you wanted, what were the kind of comics that you wanted to be reading?
I really liked the French comics that I was brought, but I mean, this was pre-Amazon, pre-being able to buy books online, so I didn't even know what to look for.
Gotcha.
Like, it just wasn't there.
And then at what point did you start thinking, well, maybe I can do this too. Maybe I have a story that I want to tell. Was it always a part of you that you wanted to illustrate and tell stories and be a creator?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was always drawing. I always, you know, every every illustration is a story in and of itself. But I think it wasn't until, you know, the 13 or so that I was like, hang on, what if I made comics?
And then did you go to school for your illustration, for your artistic talent?
Not exactly. I did take a drawing course or two because they were available. My background is languages and education. So French and Scottish Gaelic for languages. And then I went on to take my degree in education. So actually, high school teacher, so nothing to do with comics at all.
Wow. And so even though you, and I hear that a lot from creators where they, you know, whether it's family pressure or just not sure what the pathway is, you know, they get a degree in something else, you know, something stable. But then invariably the itch to create kind of worms its way in. Was that how it was for you?
Yeah, basically. What my plan was I didn't figure I'd ever be able to make comics full time. So it was, okay, I'm going to get my stable job and I'll do comics at night when I can. And then the Webtoon contest came along and I was like, well, let's just try this out and see how it goes. And then the featured offer turned up in my inbox and I could not possibly have clicked reply fast enough.
So before you heard about the contest, how familiar were you with Webtoon?
I'd say reasonably familiar. I only followed like a small handful of series and they were mostly completed. So it'd be more of a case of like going back and rereading stuff that I had liked.
Gotcha.
But yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk about more. We'll talk more about Webtoon as a platform after we talk about your strip. So why don't you give everybody an idea of what the strip is about?
So basically it's about Ray, who is this seer, who is rather pessimistic, and her ability only lets her see into the present, not the future, and it's sort of about how she grows beyond that. There's also the magical bakery, which is kind of the nucleus of the action and sort of spawned the title.
There's a little bit of magic, that, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. The romance is kind of obvious, but what made you choose to mix those two ideas?
It's funny. It's not even like a conscious choice. I put magic in like everything I write because it's both fun and useful. So sometimes it's like, oh, okay, this is a metaphor for something. Sometimes it's plot or world building. Oftentimes it's literally just because I want to draw glowing things and sparkles.
Yeah. It was kind of funny when I started reading the first, strip, the first episode, you know, you see somebody up there flying and I just thought, oh, maybe that's just a figment of their imagination. It took me a couple episodes before I realized, no, that right from the start, you see somebody flying on a broom and I just didn't catch it right away that, yeah, magic exists in this world. So I have to ask, cause I did get a little bit of a Harry Potter vibe and my wife and daughter are huge Harry Potter fans. Was that somewhat of an inspiration? Is that, do you have love for Harry Potter? Is that where your love of magic comes from beyond the drawing of sparkles?
Honestly, not really. I mean, that said, you'd be like really hard pressed to find somebody in my demographic who is not like exposed and overexposed to Harry Potter.
Right.
So like, I can't rule it out. Right. But I'd say my inspirations are more like, you know, Studio Ghibli area kind of stuff, like Kiki's Delivery Service, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the main characters in the story?
Okie doke. So the aforementioned Ray, she's got her seer power, and she expects everything she sees to be, you know, unchangeable and ultimately disappointing. Got Lori, who is like this actually pretty average guitarist and above average flirt, who thinks that everything is ultimately changeable and is super optimistic. And then we've got Marigold, who's a bakery owner, who is also Lori's aunt, who makes magic and use snacks and sort of halfway between the two in terms of worldview.
Yeah, what I find interesting about Ray when we meet her, you mentioned Lori being a super optimist, and that's obvious, but for as much as probably through experience, you know, Ray is the seer that sees the present. You know, most people hear seer and they think future, and that's something that
Rey has to deal with as well, the expectations people put on her to be able to, you know, predict their future. And she's like, no, I can really only see how things are right now, but in a way that kind of without blinders, you know. And she's really nice about it. She tries to protect people's feelings. She tries not to be too blunt, but she's really seen sort of when we meet her, she's seen to the truth of things. And that can be kind of a cynical way to live. It can be kind of lonely and isolating. But really, for all that, Rey seems like a at her center, a pretty positive person too. So I kind of wonder about what your thought process was in kind of having those two sides of Rey's personality. And then kind of to piggyback on that, we see Rey sort of transition. She grows as a character throughout the first season, both in terms of being willing to take more risks, as well as her powers may be evolving a little bit too. So was that what you had planned on for her, kind of her evolution in this first season?
Yeah, like that was the main drive. It was, you know, here she is, she's pessimistic, her interpretation of what she sees is sort of wrecking her. And then by the end of it, you know, she takes that step forward where it's like, okay, you know, maybe everything doesn't suck.
Was that hard to do when you were first conceiving of her as a character, putting those two sides together and making it work where she wasn't, you know, you didn't want to lean too far toward the pessimistic side, but you still wanted that to be an aspect of her personality that was obvious. I imagine that had to be a challenge, kind of balancing those two and getting that across to the reader.
Yeah. You know, I can't say I really thought about it. Like overall, I wanted to drive at a more positive tone. So there was never any question of going too far to the dark side, sort of.
Well, as I said, first season, totally bingeable, got through all 28 episodes. And it seems like Rey and Lori are both in really good places, but you know, you as a creator, it's all about story and all about the drama. So I imagine there are some challenges that Rey is going to face in season two. So we don't want to spoil, but what are kind of some of the obstacles you're going to put in Rey's way in general terms so that we can see her continue to grow as a person?
Yeah. Well, at the end of season one, she kind of met her goal. She got her sort of happily ever after, you know, she's got her shot at her dream career. She's got Lori. She's sort of got her horizons opening up. So in season two, it's going to be more about the choices she's going to have to make because she can't actually have all those things all at once.
Well, that's kind of topical too, right? I mean, it's not really overt what age these characters are. I think it's open to a little bit of interpretation, but they're clearly at the start of their journeys in life. And I think, you know, a lot of people can relate to that. They're sort of at that point where, okay, what am I going to do with my life? What is going to be my career? And they're sort of, you know, searching for it. And we see that Rey's kind of further along, as you mentioned, with achieving her dream career, more so than Lori. But they're still out there kind of searching and trying to find their place in the world, which, as I said, can be really relatable. Was it always your idea or your plan when you were conceiving of the story to have characters that were sort of at that sort of crossroads in their life?
No, I didn't. You know, I didn't really think that far. Initially, when I came up with the concept, I'm a big improviser. So I'll take something that feels right and just build on it. It only really found its shape sort of in the course of the editing process.
Gotcha. Now that it's this first season sort of in the can and behind you, it seems like you chose very well because it really opened up a lot of story and a lot of relatability, as I mentioned, with the main characters, but also with some of the supporting cast. This tight-knit group of friends that are getting ready to start their journeys as well. And, you know, as a lot of us know, once you do that, people kind of, you know, you end up having to go your separate ways. Life kind of pulls you apart. You're not always able to stay close to those around you. So again, I just think I congratulate you on a fortuitous choice, whether it was conscious or not, because it really, I think, plays well into the type of story that you're trying to tell. Like you said, you're trying to keep it positive. You want the story to exude this positivity. And if anything, the characters, because they're at the beginning of their journey, they really, they feel like they're full of potential. You know, you get that optimistic feel, like their whole lives are ahead of them, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, thank you. That's a delight to hear, honestly.
And, you know, not to be too much of a downer with this next question, but, you know, right after we're talking about all the positivity, we do learn in season one about something that happened to Lori in his past, in his life, that's really pretty heavy, probably the most poignant thing that happened in the first season, something that's a little bit sad. And I don't want to spoil it, but are you going to be exploring that a little more? Are we going to get to see more of how Lori dealt with that? Because again, he's a super optimistic person. And having gone through what he went through, that aspect is very interesting to me. So I'm kind of curious if we're going to get more of Lori's past, or just more of an understanding of how he sort of keeps his chin up, having dealt with that situation from his past.
Yeah, we definitely are. Like, I wouldn't expect a lot of flashbacks, but we are going to see how that has shaped him and how it like informs his present. Like, for sure, that's coming.
All right, good to know. I'm very curious. I feel like there's a lot to Lori that's under the surface. Like, we get you know, clearly we see he's a positive person, you know, and some of the comments his friends make about him are very insightful, and it gives us kind of a different perspective on him. But I feel like still waters run deep a little bit, you know what I mean? So I'm curious what more we have to learn about him.
Yeah, I can't go in detail on that, but like, some folks in the comments have made some guesses that are extremely accurate.
Oh, good to know. Good to know. Yeah, we don't want to spoil, but yeah, it's good to know that that stuff is coming. When you talk about sitting down to write, you know, we're talking about Lori, we're talking about Ray. Is there one of them that's easier to write, harder to write? Maybe there's some other characters that are a challenge. Which ones are tougher for you, and which ones come more naturally?
Honestly, they all come out about the same, just because of the way I write. Because I don't, like, it comes down to that planning thing again. Like, when it comes to having a character do something or figure out what they're going to do, I find out by doing. So it's about equally difficult every time.
That's interesting. Do you see more of yourself in one particular character or another? Is there one you can sort of relate to more?
Not especially. Like, I'll try to put some quality I personally admire in each of them, whether it's one I have or only want to have. But, I mean, if I had to pick a favorite, that would be easy. It's Marigold. But, like, other than that, not so much.
What is it? Yeah, I think I like Marigold a lot as a character. She just seems kind of no-nonsense, and very at peace with, you know, very comfortable in her own skin. She's happy with who she is, you know, doesn't worry about other people that say, oh, you know, you're just a baker, you're just that. She just lets, you know, she lets it all roll off her. So is that what attracts you to her as a character? Is that why you like her the best, or is there another underlying reason?
No, you nailed it. That's it. That's it.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, because, yeah, she's great. She's just so brimming with confidence. I think we all would. You read about the story, you read about her, and you're like, man, I'd like to go to that bakery. I'd like to hang out with Marigold. She seems like a really cool, cool person. So, yeah, will we learn more about her and the rest of the supporting cast as well in the second season? The first season obviously focused a lot on Ray and Lori, probably. as you know, the next character that got the most screen time, so to speak. And rightfully so. You know, it's the first season. We're getting to know the world in these characters. But so many of the other characters are really interesting, too. Like, you know, we just mentioned Marigold, and then the group of friends that Laurie has and that Ray's sort of been drawn into. Are they going to get a little more attention in season two?
Yes, they are. We do spread out a little bit in season two, so we'll see more of the friend group. There'll be a small number of new faces and some backstory about some familiar ones, so that's going to be fun.
Great. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. Do you have a date? Do we know when the strip's going to come back for season two yet?
I do have a date. I'm just not 100% sure it's okay for me to share it yet.
Gotcha. Okay. No problem. We don't want to get you in any trouble, but it's coming. It's coming. We know that for
yes.
sure. Great. Well, let's shift gears here and talk a little bit about the art. You mentioned you grew up, you were always drawing. Is this the style that you've always drawn in, the style that we see in the strip?
I'd say no, but only because in the last few years I've gone through a couple styles, sort of, and it's more about my approach than about, you know, a consciously developed style. I used to do like this really meticulously inked, preciously colored, you know, endlessly edited style, and it got me exhausted. And then I switched to this style with like these big blobby inks, didn't even do any pencils underneath them, like, and only allowed myself two shades of gray and black and white, like trying to go minimalist. And, now I'm doing, you know, crumbs with the chalky lines and like just this low key impressionist stuff because it's sort of a balance between what I like to do and what is convenient to do and what accomplishes like what I want to accomplish just visually.
Gotcha. So that super meticulous style, was it, did you find it just was too time consuming or was it like draining your creative energies because you put so much into it?
It was draining. I was asking too much of myself.
Gotcha.
And it wasn't fun anymore for something that was supposed to be fun.
Okay. So now that you've switched to this, sort of chalky style as you, which I didn't, you know, I'm not an artist, but now that you say that, I'm like, oh, it's so obvious. And it does give the art kind of a soft and a warm feel, which I think suits the tone of the strip very well. But with this sort of new style that you've adopted, as you said, that's kind of the best of both worlds, you know, it's not, you know, too blobby or too impressionist. You're bringing in some detail, but you're not, you know, way on the other end like you used to be. So now that you've sort of found this style that works for the strip, is there a part of the visuals that's easier or harder in this style? You know, if whether it's, you know, characters, expression, background, is there a part that you find takes longer than the rest or is more challenging?
Oh, yeah. If you asked me like a year ago, I would have said backgrounds. But now it's absolutely like faces and bodies. I always feel like I've bitten off more than I can chew because it's really hard to stylize a variety of features in a way that's consistent because, you know, the curse of not planning. Like, I didn't do a model sheet. How does this look this time? I don't know.
That's interesting to hear you say, you know, you mentioned backgrounds. A lot of times when I ask creators this question, that's immediately what they go to. Oh, backgrounds and detailed backgrounds and blah, blah, blah. But I think it doesn't surprise me to hear you say it's the characters only because you do a lot of your storytelling without dialogue, without any scripting. It's the body language and especially the facial expressions. So you're letting your characters and the way they're acting in terms of body position and body language and things like that, you're letting that do a lot of the heavy lifting in the series. And so I'm both surprised by that answer and not, because you are allowing that to do so much of the storytelling. I can see how that would be a challenge. But at the same time, you do it really well. So I'm a little surprised to hear you say that you are challenged by that sometimes, because you're almost making it look effortless. I know it's not, clearly, but you're just, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. No, thank you. It's appreciated. It's, you know, I guess it's one of those things people say, you know, you do most what you do best, and it's, oh, it takes a lot.
Yeah, you find yourself redrawing panels because it just doesn't look right or just doesn't feel right. It's not coming together, I'm sure.
Yeah, just that little nuance of angle or expression. I don't get precious about it, but I will redraw it.
Yeah. Now, do you work? I imagine you must work digitally.
I do. I keep feeling like that's a fairly recent development, because on the first webcomic series I did traditional inks, like, you know, brush and bottle, for years and years. Mm-hmm. And then finally got a screen tablet, and it still feels new. But yeah, it's all digital now.
Yeah. I mean, these days, especially if you're a solo creator creating your own webtoon strip, it's almost a must. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's something to be said for traditional and the feel of, you know, pen and ink and paper. But my God, you have to have time to sleep and, you know, do other things. And it is, especially when, like you said, when you have to redraw something, you know, you can just take off a line here, take off a line there, you know, remove a figure, and you don't have to start over from scratch. I imagine it saves so much
time. Yeah, that was the single best thing that ever happened to my art, was the ability to erase stuff and not have it mean losing hours of work.
Yeah, that's and I hear that from a lot of creators are like, man, I gotta spend time with my kids or, you know, my wife. I can't be, you know, redrawing this thing endlessly. And there's the other part of it as an artist too. You're never satisfied with your own work. You know, you're your own harshest critic, at least a good artist who's always striving to be better. So if you're not satisfied, it does save time being able to change one little part of the drawing here or there.
No, totally. Yeah.
You mentioned that you didn't really make character sheets for the characters when you first started. So how did you develop the look of the characters? Was it just kind of on the fly as you were starting the strip, just from kind of the idea of what they were going to look like in your head?
Sort of. I basically, like, when I create a character, I'll either stumble on an anchor characteristic that I want to expand on, or I'll get this impression that I want to build around. It starts out just like a couple of lines, or I'll draw a face and I'm like, I like that face, let's build on that.
So it's almost like when an artist does a caricature, right? Like, they'll pick one or two features that they kind of exaggerate, and then they build around it. So is that kind of similar to what you do with your characters?
Yeah, conceptually, I'd say that's pretty similar, yeah.
And then as far as the world itself, was it, okay, now I've got the looks of the character, so I'm kind of going to extrapolate from there the way the world looks? Or did you have an idea of the world first, and then the characters came secondary?
In this case, I'd say it was not characters first. It was the bakery concept first, and then everything else came second. And the nice thing about doing a low key magic environment is that you can make stuff up as you go along, and, you know, no one really notices the difference as long as it's done, like, in a small way.
Yeah, I do have to ask about the, I mean, are they even, I guess they're phones that have the little, like, little avatars living in them. It's such a cool and cute idea. Was that something that you knew right away you wanted to put into the story? Did it come later on? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could tell you more. I honestly don't remember. Like, I have no idea where that came from. It just happened.
Was that something that people loved in the story right away? It must have been.
Yeah. That one, people seemed to feel affection for that pretty much right away. Like, it was, oh, I wish my phone had that.
Yeah,
God, exactly. Imagine if you dropped your phone and you had one of those.
Yeah, that would be completely amazing if there was a little fairy creature living in our phones that, you know, if we could talk to when we were lonely,
that would be really cool.
Well, I mean, we're halfway there. We've got AI. It's just not that smart yet.
Yeah, exactly. And that not as definitely not as cute. I mean, the fact that they pop up out of the phone, it's just so cool. Let's talk a little bit about Webtoon as a community. You mentioned a contest. So is that how Crumb came to be on Webtoon?
I'd had a series on there before, but the series started elsewhere. So I was familiar with the platform by the time the contest rolled around. And I was nearing the end of a teaching contract, and I was like, I should do this contest. And yeah.
So even though you didn't win the contest, they still saw value in your work and reached out to you, and you, the rest is history, I guess.
Yeah. It was, because I'd done my piece, so the contest went by, and I was still working on Crumbs because I was like, I've planned this out, I might as well finish it. And around this time of year, actually, last year, that they reached out. And like I said before, I couldn't click yes fast enough. So
now, how did the readership respond? Did Crumbs take off right away? Was it a little bit more of a slow burn with building the audience? Or did you feel like you got a good reaction right out of the gate?
I'd say I got a good reaction right out of the gate. I'm very lucky to have some really passionate readers who followed from my other series. So I had that nice little family starting out, there it was. And then during the contest, Crumbs got promoted on the site or the app in some form. And I was like, this counter is broken because this number can't possibly be right.
Wow, that's really cool. Have there been any fan interactions or comments in the thread that kind of stand out to you, where when you read that, you realized, wow, I really do have something special with Crumbs?
There are so many. I had some really lovely direct messages folks have sent to me over other social media, which probably not fair to talk about those since those are private messages, but they were wonderful. But just the public comments on the series itself, I was having a bad day and Crumbs makes me feel so relaxed, or I always save this one to last so I can go to bed happy, or one of the ones I found most interesting, I've seen it more than once, is that people hear a certain kind of music when they read it. And I'm not talking about the stuff that's actually on it on those episodes, but just reading the actual non-music episodes and saying they hear, piano music, and that's totally legit. That's what I listen to when I make it.
That's cool. So it sounds like you definitely would recommend Webtoon as a platform for aspiring creators. So if someone is thinking about giving Webtoon a try, what would be your advice to somebody who's thinking about taking the plunge?
First and foremost, it would be just, do it. There's nothing to lose. I've said this in other contexts, and I'll probably say it again a million times, but if someone's looking to make a Webtoon, they should make every panel count. Everything should advance something about the atmosphere, the characters, the plot, or the world building. There should be no throwaway panels. It shouldn't be a pattern you have to follow. Everything should count. Vehement about that, as you can tell.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I think that's good advice. I've never had a creator on the podcast who's mentioned that, but it's almost like you're saying if it's worth taking the time to use your creative energy to create, then make it count, right?
Yeah. It's your story. Every panel is yours. Use them.
Well, that's really interesting. I'm glad somebody finally said it. I hadn't even thought about it. I appreciate that. Well, if any of our listeners want to know when the series is coming back, Where's the best place to follow online so we'll know when that announcement is made? Where are you most active on social media?
Odds are Twitter or Instagram. Twitter more often because then I don't have to post pictures. But yeah, most often on Twitter. My handle is Witherling there. It's like W-H-I-T. I can't spell my own username. W-H-I-T-H-E-R-L-I-N-G.
Got it. And I'll put a link to Danny's Twitter in the show notes, everybody. So if you're having trouble finding her, you can go and click there. Well, Danny, it's been great having you on to talk about Crumbs. As I mentioned, I totally devoured it. I think it's a really charming strip. As we're closing up here, is there anything that you want to add to listeners who may be learning about Crumbs for the first time, or any of your longtime readers or fans who are listening in? Anything else you want to say?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go back into my gremlin cave and work really hard on season two. We'll be back soon, I promise.
All right. Well, we can't wait for season two. So thanks again for joining me. Congratulations on the success of Crumb so far, and we're looking forward to season two.
Well, thank you so much. This was delightful.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.